to In Beta, a semi-regular conversation between physiotherapy educators who are interested in curriculum reform, innovation and critical thinking about teaching and learning. My name is Ben Ellis. I'm a lecturer in physiotherapy at Oxford Brookes University in the UK.
And I'm Michael Rowe, a lecturer in the Department of Physiotherapy at the University of the Western Cape in South Africa. In Beta is an international virtual community that's free for anyone to join. You can find us on Google Plus by searching for the In Beta community or using the In Beta hashtag on Twitter.
Hello, everyone. Evening. It's great to see so many people joined up. Hopefully some of you are back from last week, and this is going to be a more successful attempt. And for those of you who weren't here last week, we just won't mention it. It's fine. What we're going to do is essentially try and run it the same way. So a little bit of housekeeping first, just to say that welcome to In Beta. My name's Ben Ellis. I run this with Michael Rowe, who's also on the call. I have some slight anxieties about the stability of my internet. So if at any point I drop out, then Michael will take over hosting for me. We are recording, so we're recording the video and the audio of this, and we'll release those out. So some of you may have already seen or listened to the stuff from the first chat. You can find those both on the website. So if you don't want to show up in any of the recordings, then please turn off your microphone, turn off your camera, and you definitely won't be seen or heard. We're not going to force anyone to talk who doesn't want to, but we are going to be really seeking people's opinions. So this is not a webinar. This is not any expertise that I'm trying to share or that anyone else is trying to share in particular, but it's about sharing between us the ideas that people might have about assessing things online or remotely. So I'm hoping that there are some people who might have some thoughts or some things they've tried in the past that they're able to bring to this discussion. So we will use, when we're into the main part of the chat, we will use the chat function and the putting your hand up function to kind of gauge who might talk next. And we'll try and bring people into the conversation as people flag that they've got something to say. And also just to say that there is a Google Doc which is up on that you can see on the screen now, and I will just stick the link to that into the chat as well. That's there to sit alongside this. If you have things that you are happy to share, examples of stuff you've done in the past, it would be really great if you could put links or any resources onto there, because I think really what this is all about is just trying to make the best of what's a pretty challenging circumstance, and where people have got knowledge, have got things they've tried before, just trying to share that with as many people as possible. Hopefully everyone should be muted as they come in. Can I ask you all just to keep yourselves muted unless you are talking? That we can hopefully cut out and avoid sort of background noise and anything like that. And I've been really hyper vigilant and anxious about who's coming on the call, and trying to avoid people who shouldn't be here being on here, who might just disrupt us. If anything like that happens again, then I will try and identify and remove those people who are causing any disruption. And if that's not feasible to do, then I will just end the call, just to let you know. Okay, so first of all, we are going to welcome back Gisela Sol from the University of Otago in New Zealand. And this is a carryover from the first discussion that we had about teaching practical skills online. And I'd contacted some people who'd published on the use of video or kind of remote ways of teaching practical skills. And Gisela very kindly got back to me off of my email, and I had a conversation with her. And I just wanted to spend the first 10 minutes or so of this conversation inviting her to sort of share some of the experiences that she's had with using video to kind of support the practical teaching from a musculoskeletal perspective at the University of Otago in the past. So I'm hoping that she's here and she can hear me, and I'd like to invite Gisela to just share a little bit, really, to start with, about kind of what that approach was and how that worked for you.
Right, good morning. Here in Dunedin, it's now 7 o'clock in the morning. Ben, thank you for inviting me for the session, and I'm quite happy to share the experiences that we've had and see how it applies to the current situation. To introduce myself, I've been lecturing musculoskeletal and sports physiotherapy here at the Otago University since 2001. And prior to that, I was at the University of Cape Town with a number of years as a clinician in South Africa and in Switzerland preceding that. Here at Otago, we have a four-year bachelor program with a possible of an honours. And most teaching of the practical skills occurs in year two and in year three. Our clinical placements start in year two with around 27 of hours for that year, and then increases to year four. And that year is predominantly clinical with a research project. And most students are placed in other centres and hubs around the country for year four. So our intensive teaching years are the year two and year three. We have large groups of students, up to 135 a year now, and the practical skills are taught in laboratories that are repeated four times. So we often have different tutors teaching the same laboratory. So a lot of team teaching. In terms of the musculoskeletal manual skills, we seem to have three main challenges. With the traditional teaching, where we demonstrate and then the students practice and then we demonstrate skills again. The first one was the dependency of the students on the tutors. During the lab, they often complained that they couldn't see that what we had demonstrated, and we found ourselves repeatedly demonstrating to individual students rather than giving them the time to practice and to give them feedback, which is so critical. And As a team, we as the teachers often felt that we didn't have enough time in the timetable, which is probably an international challenge as well, to guide our students in their skills. A third challenge was that our students work with different physiotherapists as clinical educators and placements, and we sometimes had the feedback that we're not teaching our students correctly, or the manual skills are not good enough. So we wanted to have a baseline of resources that clinical educators could tap into as well, see what we were teaching in the laboratory session, and then help the students adapt and modify those skills to the individual patients. So we reassessed how we could improve the sessions, and in particular how we could enhance the students' self-responsibility in learning and acquiring those skills. We were lucky that we had an internal grant that we were successful in applying to. And with that, we developed a series of video skills that we filmed in the audiovisual unit of the university. And those videos include all the assessment and treatment skills that we cover in year two and in year three of the musculoskeletal modules. Initially, we produced them as a DVD. This now goes back 11, 12 years ago. And we grouped all the skills per body segment, like the traditional in the shoulder, the lumbar spine, the ankle, and so on. And they included all common domains of musculoskeletal physical examination. For example, passive and accessory physiological movement, neurological testing, neurodynamics, and joint stability testing. Since using them in 2010 for the first time, we've changed the formats to YouTube clips, and those are accessible to the students and the teachers via the student learning system. We use Blackboard. A parallel change that we made is that we reformatted the students' manual. We took photographs of all the skills. One of us was the model for those skills. And they're included in the manual. So on the left side of the manual, there's the photograph. On the right side, there's a box in which the students can write their own instructions. Now, usually, they would make the notes in the lab while we were demonstrating. But instead of that didactic teaching, we changed the practical stills sessions into a form of flipped classroom. So they had to prepare the manual in advance to the sessions by using the electronic recordings. So they might be sitting at home watching the videos and writing in the books instructions to themselves as they would have done in the labs. So basically what we did, we took the demonstrations out of the lab and they had to do those themselves. And that created far more time in the laboratory itself when we were present or when we are present. And we can give more, there's more of a chance to give feedback rather than just teaching. So when they came to the practical class, they immediately had to start working with each other and practicing the skills, and we could focus more on feedback rather than on demonstrating.
Can I just jump in and ask a question there? So I guess the, you know, what I'm then interested in is kind of how, what kind of, you know, impact that had, and how did you evaluate that? And then also, what could we take from that? So into when we're having to move everything online, and I'm sure you're probably going to come onto that, but what would be the sort of lessons to learn? Because I can see people sort of nodding, and I think that idea of sort of getting the students to have engaged with it beforehand and then come into practice, that fits really nicely. If we've not then got the opportunity to then come in to do the sort of practice, how useful do you think that approach could still be in the circumstances that we find ourselves in now?
Yep, that's what I was just about to get to, Ben, so thanks for asking. In the present scenario, in our case, we were fortunate that the year three students already had a module on musculoskeletal, the manual skills in the weeks of March. So we're avoiding the manual therapy treating at the moment in the lockdown situation. It would be difficult, to my mind, to teach online only if we had not had the initial contact, face-to-face contact with them, to demonstrate and explain with them in the room on a model exactly what we would be looking for. But what we can do at the moment is for those students who already have some basis of manual skills, in the lockdown situation, use those skills, use clinical cases, and focus more on the clinical reasoning behind and how you apply or modify it. What we can do is get students to video themselves applying manual skills on others. But then again, one has to be really careful at the moment about whom they're living with, whether they do have somebody who's willing to be a model. Am I answering your question, Ben?
Yeah, sure. And I think that probably echoes some of the sort of conversations that we had in the first chat, that it's, as you say, I think it's really difficult to replace entirely with watching. For me, the kind of, I guess, the sort of pedagogical angle that you were coming at with using the videos was that what you're wanting the students to do is to engage with them in some way more than just kind of sitting and watching them. Yeah, so you want them to watch, you want them to then take notes. And that, if what we're trying to do is if that's all we can provide at this point, then that still seems to me a useful thing to do over and above just kind of sitting and watching, is thinking how can you get more kind of cognitive involvement from the students. So there's something there, but I can see people sort of nodding that when you're saying that it's very difficult for that to just replace entirely, and if you've not got the option to do that practice, then it's you know, it's probably insufficient on its own. Would that be your sort of take?
Yes. I think there's quite a bit of learning that can be done if they watch a video and write notes and instructions to themselves. But then they have to, the next step would be to apply it to a clinical scenario, a case study.
So it would be perhaps then thinking about, okay, here are some things to watch, and then here's a case study that we're also talking about. So which of those would you be able to want to use with this person and why? And we're focusing more on the
progressions. What progressions could be built into that when it comes to treatment?
Right.
And then in terms of manual of examination or assessing their skills, there are a number of platforms that are available now where students can make their own videos and upload those to the software platform. I know of a Dunedin-based company called the Tarn Group that provides that. And then the tutors can access the students' work via that platform and make comments at different parts of the videos and allowing that asynchronous feedback and assessment. So we're not yet using those in our program, but it's something that we're thinking about. to use further on.
That's
so
great.
That comes more to us assessing themselves, assessing themselves, and then us logging in and assessing them on their skills.
That's great. So, and I'm conscious that we could probably talk for an hour just with yourself, but I'm wanting to open this out. So that's a really nice jumping off point, I think, there to kind of say, okay, let's think about where everyone else is at in terms of assessing. I'm just going to start a poll, which you should hopefully see on your screens and be able to answer, which is just asking three questions. So is your Higher Education Institute, is it planning to assess practical skills remotely at this point? So who is here thinking, yeah, we definitely need to do this, and we're maybe just working out how? Who's considering it but not really decided at this point, and who's definitely not? Then the second question is whether there's anyone in the room who has already uses some aspect of kind of digital or remote approaches. And I'm hoping that people who answer yes to that question might be happy to share a couple or share what they do with other people. And then the third question was just, I guess, to get the backdrop to this. So are people feeling they've got to do this because it's required from the learning outcomes that we are assessing practical skills summatively? And that may not be a question that we get into in a huge amount of depth in the time we have tonight, but I'm interested in it as a potential follow-up conversation to this, because I think that where that is the structure, it's putting a pressure on us to find a solution to this. But maybe there are other ways at this, but they're not ones we can solve in the short term. So I'll leave that up for a moment. It would be really good if there is anyone who has answered yes to any of the digital remote approaches that they're currently using, who would be happy to share what they are. So can anyone, the couple of people who answered yes to that question, make themselves known to me, either in the chat or by raising a hand or just by starting talking, and share what it is that you've been doing digitally.
My name is Raquel. My English is not very good, but I'm trying. Okay. I already make some assessment on video, but the practical was doing in the school. We make the practical sessions in school before this situation. Yeah, and then we ask our students to film themselves with other persons at home and send us the video to assess. And it was a very simple assessment. It's about intervention in facial palsy. And they do the video. They have a clinical case, such Gisela said before, and they decide what is the best way to do the intervention, and they show the manual skills and send us back the videos with that. But we make the practice with them at school and we correct them at school.
Great, thank you. and so is that an assessment which has been part of that program for several years, or is that something you've brought in this year just because of what's happening with the
It was interesting because this part is new, and before this situation, we already decided that we are going to do the facial palsy intervention assessment by a video. So it's already decided, not because of this situation, but in other years before, we make some in the pediatric intervention, not in adult neurology, that is my area. We make some videos. They have a clinical study, and they need to decide what is intervention. They decide what is the plan and execute it and send us back. And then we discuss in the classroom to all the students, but the main was a video that they send us to us. Here, my doubt that when I listen to Gisela, because the question is for me is, okay, I can show them how to do it. I can show the technique, but how I correct the handling skills. It's not easy for me without feeling, without put my hands in the hand of the student.
There are some challenges when there are kind of very specific practical skills that we're trying to assess. And I wonder whether maybe it depends a little bit on the context. So if the practical assessment that you're looking at trying to do is one which, you know, it requires people to adapt and requires people to be exercising at home, then there are some real opportunities there to say, well, okay, how could we do this in that context? So, I mean, I was thinking of one of the modules that I ran was looking at a sort of long-term condition exercise group. So normally the students run it in a sort of group of four, and they have to do some exercise and some education components. And actually, you know, as a practical, that you could adapt that relatively simply, I felt, to at home, because the context would change slightly, but you'd be saying how would you change the group that you'd planned in the context of a kind of pandemic where people can't come in, what would you try and get them to do at home? And then the students having to think in just the same way that a clinician is. But that might be more easy with a kind of practical assessment of sort of exercise prescription and sort of group exercise type approach, rather than a very specific kind of manual therapy. I'm going to invite, so I think someone else might have started to come in with a point when we lost Raquel. Do they want to pick up whoever that was? Gisela, were you coming back in on a point that Raquel had raised?
You just lost me for a few minutes here. I was mentioning that there were a number of chats coming through.
Okay. Oh, great. Yes. Perfect. Yeah, but yes. I'm so going to struggle to balance myself between all of these. There's a huge amount of conversation going on in there, which is great. I'm just going to ask Michael to keep an eye on that and sort of pull people over from there and sort of flag them to me if that's okay. Is there anyone else then who has done something similar to Raquel, where they have looked at getting the students to record themselves and then providing feedback, either formatively or as part of a summative assessment?
Yeah, I'm quite happy to come in. This isn't personal experience from my own university, but when I've been searching around for some videos to use for teaching, I have seen videos that have been created by students on students from Northumbria University, who are one of our local competitors, and they were demonstrating manual techniques. Various cardiovascular respiratory skills on one another, and I wasn't clear exactly when the videos have been produced, but it looks as though they'd shifted over to getting students to at least formatively to demonstrate skills on one another. We had a little bit of a concern. I'm from Teesside University in the northeast of England. We were having a discussion before the university closed about the potential safety issues with if we asked students to find a housemate or a family member to demonstrate the skills on us. Usually that we would obviously risk assess the person who was going to be the model and make sure that there weren't any contraindications, etc. So we did consider getting them to video, but decided on the balance of safety that it was maybe not the best idea. So we've currently shifted to having Vivas to assess the students' clinical reasoning skills at the various levels, and we have a plan. It may take the rest of the year to do formative feedback on their practical skills in preparation for going out on placement.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you. A thought that just popped into my head there was whether or not anyone has been asked to do or is considering saying that what they've observed in the practical and teaching that they've done so far is that they have seen that the students have met the outcomes. So they'd be happy from what they've been able to observe that they would sort of sign them off and sort of pass through to enable the student to progress, be that into the next year or onto placement or whatever it might be. And so kind of a shifting from what would have normally taken place in a structured summative assessment onto a sort of formative assessment, whether that's an approach that's being taken by anybody. I'm just going to put that question out there.
I'll jump in on that if you want, Ben.
Yeah, please, go for it.
We are trying to do something quite similar to that, in that our first year practical skills would be something that we would normally assess face-to-face, obviously, in the setting. What we're planning to do is an online kind of conversation, so they talk through the principles of how they would assess and treat using practical skills, and we might ask them to talk about contraindications, precautions, and health and safety aspects, and we might challenge them a little bit on that, with a view to we will always repeat these kind of things in the early part of our second year, so that they do have these kind of opportunities for formative feedback, and we might look at kind of some kind of portfolio where they can, I don't want to say the word competencies, I don't like that word, but they can have that kind of signed off by their peers and by the staff in the sessions leading into their second year exams, which is more case-based rather than just demonstrate a skill. So it'll be a bit wider, but they do get that opportunity in the second year to come back to it.
Yeah, great. So that conversation is that on similar themes and topics that you would normally do the practical assessment?
Yeah, it's going to be, the plan, hopefully. I haven't got fingers crossed because it's still in planning stages, but the plan is that we would be asking them, you know, how would you do this particular skill? Whereas before we'd be asking them to show us that particular skill. So it's moving to talking through exactly where they might put their hands, explaining the anatomy a little bit more, or explaining the rationale for doing that particular assessment or treatment technique and how they're doing it, how they might modify it if the patient had a certain condition. So it's a little bit more talky, but they still would still need all the knowledge that they would normally do if they were actually physically doing that task.
I wonder whether there are kind of benefits to that approach anyway, in that, and I don't know whether this is kind of, you know, this is getting onto a broader aspect of this, but I think it's maybe relevant, in that, you know, practical exams are extremely stressful for most students and staff, to be quite frank, half the time. So we put an awful lot of onus on students having to kind of demonstrate, and they feel that they're trying to show us these kind of very specific practical skills, often at the same time as answering questions or working through a kind of clinical reasoning approach. And I wonder whether, in terms of, you know, some of the opportunities that are arising with the way we're having to think about things differently now, is that maybe there are, and I saw, and there was some comment in the chat, I think, to this kind of effect, is that maybe that it's not a bad thing if we separate some of this stuff out. And I'm thinking back during my time at Oxford Brookes, one of the things we did on one of the modules there was to take some of the practical skills that we used to assess summatively in a practical exam scenario and just assess them formatively in a much more relaxed kind of workshop way. Again, I'm not a fan of competency as a term, but essentially we were doing that. We were saying, you can spend as long as you want here until you and I feel happy that, you know, you're at a decent level for what we would expect you to be at now. That's not to say when you go on placement in 6 months time that I'm saying that you're good to go and you can walk onto the ward and do this, you know, but for where we're at, you know, I'm happy with sort of what I've seen. You've had an opportunity to practice it, and that actually the things like the communication skills, the clinical reasoning, are, you know, not that difficult for us to assess using Zoom, using whatever we might do at distance, you know, whether that's at the same point in time, whether it's on recording something. And that there may, you know, it may be in similar to how we had the discussion in the practical teaching, that actually there could be a sort of formative sort of a mop-up session at a point in time in the future where we are coming back in and being able to do those face-to-face and sessions again, where we could sort of tick off the practical skills that we feel we need to in terms of the module outcomes, having assessed summatively and passed the student through based on some of the kind of communication and the reasoning. And that maybe there's some good stuff in that in terms of it shifts our focus on what we're getting hung up on as educators, and there might be some scope for some sort of positive change in terms of what we're focusing on in our assessment coming off the back of that. So I'm gonna leave that to hang as a point that could be challenged, I guess. Does that fill anyone with horror? Kim, you've put your hand up.
Can I just jump in here? So my name's Kim. I'm at Lunex University in Luxembourg, and we're in a somewhat different situation to a lot of the universities that run on kind of year programs. So we run on semesters, and each semester the student has a number of modules that they've got to complete. And our modules are 3 weeks long sometimes 4 weeks. And then at the end of the module, they have a 2 week gap before they're then assessed on that module. Sometimes we run two modules back to back and then assess both of them after the two have run. But what it means is that they will get to a place where if we haven't assessed them, they can't progress any further because we can't just push out their assessments to the end of the year. So it is an interesting challenge, but it also has meant that we've got a bit more flexibility in our timetable because of our teaching being block teaching. So, I mean, with our teaching now, what we've done is that our semester started last week, that the modules that started, the first three modules with our students that are in their second year are all practical modules for MSK. So we've delivered all the content, the lecture content for those online, pre-recorded lectures with live Q&A sessions. And then we've actually had to delay all our practical classes at the moment we've rescheduled everything after the 18th of May because we are hoping that that's going to be the point at which we can have students back on site. But that's not based on anything formal at the moment. That's based on making some guesses in March when we were making decisions. And then they will complete their practical classes and then their exams after that. So we've had to shift everything out and push some of our exams into September, which is normally our period when students do re-exams before the semester starts in October.
Yeah, thanks, Kim. And I think, you know, again, reflecting on the conversation that we had on teaching sort of a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that I think there were quite a few people who were going to be doing something similar in terms of trying to push the practical teaching back. And then I guess it makes sense if there's enough flex in your kind of academic program then to allow you to do the assessment off the back of that, then it makes sense to do it that way. And there may then be positives about having assessed some aspects prior, and I guess that was kind of where I was coming at on the point before, that it may be if the university system requires that students have passed or haven't passed or have been demonstrated to meet those learning outcomes, that it may be possible to do that without having to assess all the practical, but with still looking at the reasoning or the kind of communication aspect of the clinical skills, and then come back to kind of mop up more formatively those things in the way you're describing later on. So thanks. I just caught sight of something in the chat there. Alec Rickard was talking about students in cardiorespiratory being assessed via Zoom and showing demonstrated skills like auscultation on themselves. And this is a question to Alec or to anyone. It made me think about what the benefits are of, if we're going to try and do something like this, of using a kind of synchronous assessment format like Zoom. So we're live and they're live and we're asking questions doing that way, versus a more asynchronous one where the students could record something and upload it then for the academics to give a feedback on and mark at some later point in time. And I didn't know, Alec, whether you could come in and kind of talk us through your reasons for picking a synchronous kind of approach, and whether there was anyone else who was doing something asynchronous or who could sort of balance that out.
Yeah, hi. Hello, everybody. Yeah, we've had some discussions actually for, I'm still talking, I know a lot of the chat was going on to next academic year. We're still talking about finishing our current academic year. We've actually split it into two parts, so there will be an asynchronous part and a synchronous part because of the risk of the stability of the connection and things like that. So we're trying to minimise the amount of time we spend on a live synchronous connection. So the idea we've actually moved towards is they will video themselves doing a skill, I take on board everybody's concerns about how it will be, and we're not solely relying obviously on this method. We're just trying to do the best we can in the circumstances up to this point, and then we'll try and perhaps mop up with a specific face-to-face kind of catch-up at some point, but or via clinical practice as has been suggested, whenever that may be. But yeah, so we're going to have two parts where the students submit a video. We'll give them direction of what we want them to do, to explain what they're trying to achieve. And then we will have a live link where we will discuss kind of things linked to pathophysiology, their understanding of what they're expecting to hear, for example, in auscultation, and what that might mean. So, yeah, so we're not having a completely live element.
So had that shifted in the conversations that you were sort of having then, from where you thought you might sort of start off by doing things, and then you've ended up in a place which is kind of less synchronous but still has some aspects of that?
Yeah, so initially I think we were hoping to kind of do it, just pretty much transfer our entire practical assessment, thinking, oh yeah, we'll just Zoom it or Skype it or whatever. And then the reality, you know, of kind of the stability of the connections, some of our students discussing things that actually a lot of them haven't got great internet connections, even the ones in the UK, let alone anyone internationally. And then discussing with some of our IT support teams or learning technology type academic side in the university as well, kind of suggesting where possible to limit the amount of synchronous live connection where we can.
That's great, thanks. Is there anyone else who is looking at doing a synchronous live approach or a mixed approach that includes some element of that? Seth, I can see you waving. Do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, that's what we're planning to do at the moment in Leicester for our first years. Second years wouldn't have been doing practical exams at the moment, and we don't have a third year. So we're a little bit better off, I guess, than some places. But we are going to do, at the moment as it stands, synchronous assessment for the first year's practical skills across all three core areas, cardio, neuro and MSK. And we're going to do the same thing for part of their anatomy movement analysis session as well. The rest of it will be written, but synchronized with their assessment as well. So we're going for it. We've discussed it for a long period. As a few people have said in the chat, the university has been very flexible with whether we just make it a pass-fail year, essentially, and move forwards, accepting that we can't assess all the learning outcomes with the current state of play. And it'll have to be additional sections next year. So we're looking at maybe using Wednesdays going forwards, so the students won't get their university sports afternoon and do catch-up work then. And we're looking at, they're just going to be known as the COVID year, and they're going to have a different experience to the rest of students across the world. And I think it's nearly accepting that is going to be the state of play, and just coming up with a solution that works for your university, your teaching, and whatever else you can do.
Okay, great. Thanks, Seth. Anyone else? I can see a couple. Joanne Marley taking a live approach for first years.
Yeah, we had similar conversations with our digital learning folk where they expressed some concerns about the live scenario. But we've decided to go ahead with that, to just try and replicate as closely as possible to their planned OSCE exam. And the main difference is, rather than being asked to demonstrate, they'll be asked to describe essentially the procedure. And we are going to use the telephone as a, okay, if all goes pear-shaped, we'll resort to a sort of oral telephone type exam. We have been told definitively we will not have students back on campus before August. Postponing things, we might postpone some practical exams, but we're trying to avoid that as far as possible.
Yeah, I think that sort of sharpens the sort of need to make that call, doesn't it? When you know that even the time to come back and do anything after that point is going to be so squeezed that it's probably not going to be practical.
Yeah, so I think just as far as we can, and I suppose taking the approach someone else said, the best we can in the current situation, and not try and aim for exact replication of what we were doing previously, just trying to get things as good as we can.
Great, thanks. I'm going to come to Michael in a minute because I can see your hand up, but Kim just raised a question in the chat which I thought was a really pertinent one, which is how are the students responding to the idea of doing kind of virtual distance assessments, and if anyone's had students who've already gone through it, how did they find it? Because if there is some pushback against teaching going online, how happy are they that this is going to, that they're going to be able to be assessed fairly? Has anyone kind of broached those conversations with students, or had any feedback from students to that effect yet?
Yeah, for our MS, we were in a situation where the students were informed on Tuesday the 17th of March that they would have 4 days of a reading week, and we then were given 4 days to redesign the entire course, both entire courses, because we've got a pre-reg master's course as well. A module that I'm module lead on then had its summative on the day that the students were supposed to be returning. So we switched to doing it was a poster defence, so Viva exam, defence of the poster, which had already been submitted just before the students were told to go home and have a reading week. And other than a couple of technical glitches, which meant that students had to be rescheduled, the assessment went ahead as planned. It would just have been a face-to-face discussion anyway, so it nicely translated into an online discussion through a similar platform to this. The feedback on the day from the students was that they felt that it was a similar enough process to what they'd been briefed for prior to being told to go home for a week, so we haven't had any negative feedback from the students on that particular assessment. They were very flexible around doing the assessment later in the day or via telephone where there were problems, though it was some caveats on that. It is a small cutting students, and the students are master's level in their second year of an accelerated course, so we're possibly a little bit more prepared to have these kinds of changes put into their course. We may find that, well, certainly the five students that I assessed, some of them performed in just the same level as the previous cohort, but the fact that it was a simple assessment to switch to online did make things simpler. And we then got a message from the university about a week later telling us to just give blanket 1 week extensions on everything, but it was a little bit too late for me by that point.
You've kind of already gone. I mean, I guess that there was a point that you kind of raised there about being flexible with time, in that as well as what this means for the students, there is also an impact on staff, and you know, I know, I'm sure there are probably others of you who are currently at home with kids and trying to teach young kids and do homeschooling with them, and you know, this time 8 o'clock in the evening I can have this conversation without a 5-year-old child coming to join it, but most conversations I have in the day that's not the case, and so for me there would be that other element of if I was trying to do a synchronous sort of live Zoom in the day, it just wouldn't be practical for me to do that. So there's those impacts too. I'm going to come to Michael, who's had your hand up for a little while.
Thanks, Ben. I notice a lot of the conversation expectantly is around online and using video. And I just want to kind of raise the level of complexity a little bit by describing situation that some of my students find themselves in. So a few days ago, I heard from one of our final year students who doesn't own a laptop. He has a phone, and he gets internet connection from one corner of his yard. And so we're in a situation where we are having to assume that every student in our department has that level of connection and access to device. And we're trying to figure out, you know, what are our options in terms of trying to do anything? I mean, have you ever tried to type an essay on a cell phone? And so we're having to completely reevaluate all of our expectations. Our students are living in shared housing where they don't have any private space. So, you know, that it, every single assumption that we have about our students, we're getting pushback on just by having a better understanding of what their home environment is like. And I was just wondering if anyone here has got any experience in trying to do any kind of assessment, you know, practical or other, with students who kind of look like the student that I've just described.
I can see that Seth was waving his hand, but there was Raquel, do you want to come
in? Yes, after we came to home, I tried to ask the students, because they already make the first video from the face, if they want to see if they can be assessed in other practice. And I have some students that are living at this moment alone without any family. So no one to where to practice on. So they said that they can't do the practice. So I decided to postpone it.
Yeah. I guess it's about there's a requirement for the universities to have much greater flexibility than they would normally do then in terms of how they're kind of applying their policies and processes onto students at this point.
Some they don't have internet at home, the others don't have any family to train on, so they decided it's impossible for them to do this kind of assessment. So this is a reality in our school.
Thank you, Raquel. Seth, did you were going to add something on the back of Michael's question as well?
Yeah, we've not had the internet issue. Our bigger issue is more students with childcare issues, where their partners work in the day. And when we've been talking about scheduling even just sessions, never mind the exams, we've had quite a bit of pushback from them as well. So we're scheduling them late in the evening at 9 at night and things for the exam format for those students to have that flexibility. It doesn't solve the internet connection issue, but there's a whole load of problems with the student housing and their social situations that are having to be accounted for. We've probably got 5 students at least in the first year with kids. So just working out that is hard.
Michael, there's been no thought behind this other than it just coming into my head now. But is there any feasibility? And I don't know what the level of lockdown is with you in South Africa. So this may depend in different places. But is there any potential to kind of provide a space that a student could come to and be kind of socially distanced adequately within to record something, so that any issues of kind of equipment and bandwidth and that kind of thing would be okay, where it would be seen as acceptable and a sort of essential thing for the student to come and do, or is that just not going to be practical and an option for sort of anybody across the piece? I'm guessing most campuses are probably completely closed down, but I just wondered whether there are any differences in how this is being approached around the world, because obviously I can only really speak to how it is here in the UK.
So our situation is very different. We have a complete lockdown with army and police personnel in the streets. It's illegal to be out without some kind of permission. So there are people who are going to jail and getting massive fines for being out in the street. So, you know, the suggestions that we have students, you know, going to go borrow laptops. You know, first of all, if you're a student who is getting internet access in your yard, there is no one near you who has a laptop. In terms of, you know, when the lockdown ends, then the university's already made it clear that they won't be opening. So we won't be able to ask students to come into campus after the lockdown ends. At the moment, it's supposed to end in 2 weeks' time. But, you know, all the evidence seems to be that this will be extended. It will need to be extended longer than that in order to be effective. So we're assuming that we'll be back on campus by June, July. So you know, at that point, once we're allowed back on campus, then a lot of these problems disappear. But, you know, we're just desperately trying to figure out what we can do for students at this point, so that we're not essentially hitting pause. So until we can figure out how to do some kind of learning with our students, then we're setting everyone back by 4 or 5 months, which basically means that you don't finish the year.
Okay, thanks. I'm going to come to Robin, who put her hand up in the chat.
I was just sending Michael a message to say that I'm from Zimbabwe. I know about the police and all the lockdowns and stuff, and I don't know that I can offer any solutions to that with people who don't have phones, but I totally get where you're coming from. At Brooks in the first world, we are doing our exams. So we've got a mix, and we've got a mix across the three modules. So MSK respiratory and with the neuro exams, because both of our lecturers have small children, we're not going to be able to do those live. So we're using a Google Hangouts model for MSK and cardio respiratory. And we've been piloting how well this works by doing undergraduate interviews using Hangouts, which has worked really well, just to see how the connections work and whether we'll have too many problems. And actually, across 6 different staff members, it's worked really well. So we're going to try and do our vivas using Hangouts. And what we're going to do is send them case studies as we normally do a week before. So usually they get 4 case studies, which they prepare. And then on the day they get 1, which they pick, and they have 10 minutes to pull it together and then present it. So rather than doing practical skills, they're going to be having to talk through those practical skills, like I would auscultate, okay, which way would you put in the stethoscope, which aspects of the chest would you auscultate, what would you expect to hear. So just talking through the skills, both for respiratory and for MSK. And then for neuro, they're also going to get their case study a week before, and what they're going to have to do is put together a slide with clinical reasoning, and then a narrative that they can either record or write, depending on, we're happy for them to use their innovation as to what learning style kind of suits them best, as long as the information is on there. But the learning outcomes for neuro are a little bit different, because usually it's much more difficult from a practical point of view. So we may have to look at that when they come back. But we have already mostly met their learning outcomes through an essay, which we don't have in respiratory and MSK. So we're hoping that that kind of meets the best model of supporting staff and supporting students. And then if there are any students that can't do it, then we will offer them an uncapped resit when we can do it, but hopefully getting everybody through as best we can, which I'm pretty sure is what everybody else is doing. But that's kind of the Brooks method at the moment.
Great, thanks. I'm conscious of the time and of trying to wrap it up. So it feels like we've touched on synchronous and asynchronous ways of doing things, of pushing stuff back, of sort of wrapping up in a more formative way maybe later on, and breaking the sort of assessment out into different components, some of which might be easier to assess at distance than others. There's been a whole load of chat happening in the chat, which I've not been able to follow quite as much as I'd like to, but we will be downloading that. In fact, I think as individuals, anyone can download the chat anyway, but we'll put that up on the website. I wondered whether there was anyone who had any points that they felt hadn't been raised at this point. Probably not so much a question, but anything that, you know, is something that you are trying or a different approach that no one else has really brought up yet, that you wanted to add in this last couple of minutes.
Hi, can I come in again? Yeah, the only thing I wanted to say was, I suppose, well, I know most people are thinking, but I think a lot of this will require radical kind of thinking of what's absolutely necessary. And I know we've got some people from obviously very different countries, and some were asking in the chat about how to make up hours and things. And that's one thing I know the UK contingent will be aware of, where, you know, there is some flexibility being offered on what is required in terms of minimum hours. But likewise, where there was discussion early on about needing kind of face-to-face for practical skills, I think whilst taking on board the likes of Jill's comments about safety and everything else, you know, are absolutely necessary. At the same time, I think we've just got to try and do the best we can, you know. So I think everybody is doing a great job of thinking of different things, and no one should be beating themselves up too much about kind of, is it going to be the right thing? And you know, as long as we're justifying and reasoning like we expect our students to do, you know, as long as we can rationalize it, I think, you know, we'll all get there, really. Sorry, bit of a rant.
I don't think that's a rant. So I think that's probably a better sort of summing up and positive point to end on than I was going to manage. I think that's probably a really good point. Oh, there was a hand going up in the bottom left of my screen. Louisa, did you want to just come in there?
A question really for others. I was thinking about criteria and how we go about the business of designing criteria at this time for alternative synchronous or asynchronous assessments, and how we grade the students now and give them meaningful feedback on how they perform in their assessments. Has anyone developed some modified criteria at this time that they can share?
That's an interesting question. In the absence of anyone jumping in immediately with that, what I'm going to suggest is if that's the case, if people would be happy to share that, so either through the Google Drive link would maybe be a good place to paste anything in that you have done that you'd be happy to share with others. Because I think, you know, again, that's something that's probably going to be dependent on the institution. I know some places will have fairly sort of generic criteria that they could adapt to different things, whereas others might have much more specific ones that would need, you know, some definite alteration to be able to be applied onto a different style of assessment. I'm going to say, in order to finish roughly on time, which I'm poor at doing, that I'm going to draw this conversation to a close. I'm sure there's loads more that could be said, but I hope it's useful just to hear other people's experiences. And I think, as Alex said, just to sort of see that everyone is trying to just like work their way through this, and that there are, the problems do differ. We don't all have exactly the same issues, but you know, we're kind of in the same ballpark, and trying to come up with the best solution that we can, and really that is all we can do at this point. So please do keep sharing examples of things that you see, either through the Google Drive, send stuff to me at Twitter or by email, and I'll try and keep sharing stuff. If these sort of conversations are useful, let us know. I'm keen to kind of keep this ball rolling. We've gone from having these kind of conversations with about four or five of us, which were absolutely lovely and much easier to control and keep track of, to having sort of nearly 50 people on here this evening, which is absolutely great. And so, you know, that's one of the things that was really at the heart of what we wanted to do when we started talking about InBeta as an idea, was just bringing people together to share experiences and ideas. And for me, I think that's a really valuable thing to do. And actually, what this is kind of showing is that all of, you know, it's not impossible to do it, and maybe it's opening a door for people to look outwards a little bit more when they're trying to kind of get ideas that they can then take into their own teaching and learning practice. So thanks to everyone for joining. I'm really pleased we got through this without any porn, as far as I can see. Thanks a lot, and I hope to see some of you soon.